iHeart 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz. The Israeli hostages are coming home tomorrow in Tel Aviv celebrations.
Thank you, Trump. Thank you, Trump. Thank you, Trump.
Vice President J.D. Vance on CBS's Face the Nation.
It's a big day for the entire world.
Vance says the hostages will come face-to-face with the man credited with negotiating their release.
We feel very confident the hostages will be released and that the president is actually traveling to the Middle East, likely this evening, in order to meet them and greet them in person.
Reporter Linda Gradstein says the hostages will get immediate medical attention.
Hospitals in Israel are prepared to receive them and say they are likely to be severely malnourished as well as suffering from other health problems. The hostages will be turned over to the Red Cross, who will then transfer them to Israeli soldiers, where they will travel by helicopter to the hospital and be reunited with their families.
President Trump will address the Israeli parliament tomorrow, then head to Egypt to witness the signing of the peace agreement. Four people have been killed, at least 20 injured in a shooting in South Carolina. CBS's Vicki Barker has that.
Police say the shooting occurred in the early hours at Willie's Bar and Grill on St. Helena Island. A large crowd was at the scene when sheriff's deputies arrived. They found dozens of people suffering from gunshot wounds.
At least six people were shot and killed in two separate shootings in Mississippi. Four of the deaths happened overnight Friday into Saturday in Leland, where people had gathered for a high school homecoming game.
Blood coming from people's rears and back, side, arm, head. And when you get out, it was like Beirut. It was the most horrific scene I've ever seen.
And two people were killed at a high school homecoming game in Heidelberg. A nor'easter is bringing heavy rain and strong winds to the East Coast today. WBOC-TV reporter Tiffany Amber.
Along the Delaware Bay, coastal communities are gearing up.
Anytime you're going to see 50-mile-an-hour winds and a sustained of, and that's what it looks like, we're going to see at least four tide cycles, it looks like. When we see that, we know it's going to be a bad storm.
Neighbors say they're doing what they can today to prepare as they get ready for the first nor'easter of the fall season.
I'm hoping it doesn't take a whole lot of our beach. That's my main concern.
The cause of Oscar-winning actress Diane Keaton's death yesterday has not yet been released. CBS's Ali Bauman says Keaton had been busy just before her death.
Keaton was known on screen and off for her tailored style marked by menswear. The prolific actress was working on three productions when she died.
Diane Keaton was 79 years old. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
For Civic Media News, I'm Charlotte Pittman. Some messages say the radical left Democrat shutdown. Others just mention a lapse in funding. Legal experts are warning that some of the messages about the federal government shutdown may violate the Hatch Act. Judith Ruiz Branch of the Public News Service has more.
As Washington continues to bombard the public with political rhetoric about the government shutdown, some law experts argue these messages could be breaking a law put in place to prohibit political sway by the executive branch. The Hatch Act prevents officials from using their authority to politicize the federal workplace, and it ensures nonpartisan administration of government programs. Delaney Marsco with Campaign Legal Center says things like government websites displaying messages that blame one political party for the government shutdown are skirting the line of Hatch Act violations.
Specifically mentioning a political party, kind of targeting a political party, does come a little bit closer to that definition of what political activity is.
About 18,000 federal government employees in Wisconsin could be impacted by the shutdown and potential layoffs. A recent Gallup poll shows only 1 in 3 Americans trust the federal government to act in society's best interests, regardless of political affiliation.
The whole ethics system, from like conflicts of interest law to the Hatch Act, all of that exists to try and create an ecosystem where political coercion doesn't exist.
Marsco says she's concerned about the systemic dismantling of these ethics guardrails, pointing to the firing of inspectors general or threats to defund oversight offices as examples.
The more awareness the public has about the guardrails that are in place, they can hopefully understand that it doesn't have to be this way.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
More news anytime at civicmedia.us.
97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio and home to mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly sunny for today, a high in the mid-60s. For tonight, mostly cloudy, a few showers around. Lows in the low 50s and a little breezy. A clearing sky as we look on into Monday. High temperatures in the mid-60s. It's 60 right now.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, what is the view from across the pond for Democrats who live overseas? We're going to hear from George King IV from Democrats Abroad. Join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am your host, Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm so excited because today is the first of a series of conversations with candidates for governor in one of the most politically interesting states, Wisconsin, during one of the most politically charged times, honestly, in our nation's history. And I'm thrilled to be joined today by State Senator Kelda Royce. If you know Kelda's story, you know that she has been in the thick of some of the biggest fights in Wisconsin politics for the past couple of decades. She's the mom, actually mom and stepmom, of five kids. She runs a small business, and she is in the trenches. She's been in the trenches of reproductive rights for over two decades, way before most people even saw Dobbs coming. And she was one of the lawmakers out there protesting Scott Walker's Act 10 back in 2011 when the Capitol was just packed with people and the whole country was watching Wisconsin, not unlike now. This is her second run for governor. The first was back in 2018, but this time is really different. She believes that this moment demands something who has been training for, or someone who's been training for it her entire career, and she's that person. So we're going to talk about what she's learned since that first campaign, how she thinks about compromise versus drawing lines in the sand. It's so important in a time when we're as divided as we are, and what it's really like trying to govern in a truly purple state. And of course, how she juggles it all, right? So welcome, Kelda Royce.
Great to see you, Kristen. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I am really excited to spend this time with you because you get to do little like clips, short interviews here and there, but like rarely do you get to sit down for an entire hour and have a real conversation. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. This is great.
Yeah. So the field of candidates for governor right now is really interesting. Amongst the Democrats, the diversity, the women, the different ethnicities, the geographical variability is so interesting. There's something for nearly everybody there. But what is it that exactly sets you apart as a candidate?
I would say three things are what we need from our next governor. Number one, we need someone who can win statewide, somebody who knows how to mount a big campaign and can galvanize support across the ideological spectrum. I've been able to do that. I have support from the far left progressive movement, as well as Republicans for Royce. And I'm really proud of that broad coalition of support. Number two, we need somebody who's going to stand up to Trump. We are in an incredibly dangerous moment in our country's history. Something that really none of us have lived through before. And it is essential if we are going to come out of this with a democracy that we have leaders, especially in these swing state governorships, that are willing to stand up, be honest about what Trump is doing, and really protect Wisconsinites from the harms that are coming down from the Republican administration. I have never been intimidated by bullies or billionaires, people like Trump who want to take away our rights and freedoms. In fact, that's what I've spent my career doing, standing up to people like that. But the third thing we need is we need someone who can govern, someone who is ready on day one. We are about to have, Kristen, an incredible opportunity in Wisconsin. Now, I've been in and around politics for about 25 years in Wisconsin. And once during that time, did we have Democratic control in the Senate, the Assembly, and the governorship. And it was very narrow, and it was all too brief. And we really were not prepared to maximize that opportunity. If we're going to be successful in really changing the trajectory of the state, making Wisconsin a place that is reclaiming our progressive heritage, where we are giving every single person, no matter who you are or where you're from, that freedom to thrive that we all deserve, we need a governor who is prepared to offer that leadership. And whatever the composition of the legislature is, I think we're going to have a narrowly Democratic Senate and a narrowly Democratic Assembly, but we might not get the Assembly, right? We need a governor who's prepared to actually get things done and move the state forward, no matter what the legislature looks like. And I have done that throughout my entire career. In every kind of legislature, I have delivered important progressive wins, and that's what I can do as governor.
Hey, I definitely want to talk about some of the wins that you've had working together with your Republican colleagues, because there's been a lot. I mean, you've had to, because most of the time that you have spent in the legislature, you've been in the minority, like you mentioned. And these times, it is so different than it was back in 2018 when you ran for governor.
Mm-hmm.
It's so different. I mean, the way that Donald Trump is managing this country right now is really dividing us. And it's really making people fearful and uncomfortable and completely disenchanted with politics. Mm-hmm. So how do you take the lessons that you learned in 2018 and use them in this campaign now, 7 years later? Eight. It'll be eight by the time that you are elected. Eight.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I view that campaign and really my work over the past 20 plus years has been traveling around Wisconsin and really listening to people deeply, hearing their concerns, their challenges, and their ideas and hopes, and then trying to translate that into good public policy and getting it done in Madison, right? Building coalitions, bringing people together, fostering compromise, and doing my best to build Democratic power, both small D and large D Democratic power, mm-hmm. and get those public policy wins that are going to help make people's lives better. This campaign is really just a continuation of the work that I've been doing throughout my career. But I will say, with the backdrop of Trump, people are feeling so frustrated and powerless and upset right now. And I totally understand that. That is absolutely justified and legitimate, especially if you were someone who voted for Trump because you were angry about the high costs. And Trump said he was going to take care of that for you. And then the first thing he did when he was in office was do exactly the opposite, right? Mm-hmm. He just straight up lied, went 180 degrees and started engaging in these reckless tariff wars that are rising costs on everything from, you know, diapers to agricultural products, and now causing our farmers to lose their access to markets. I mean, people have every right to be frustrated, but the message that I want to bring is that I know we can build something better together if we work alongside one another and if we do our best to be honest about what Trump is doing and try something different here in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad you brought up soybeans and diapers and the cost of groceries, because all of these things affect different people in different ways. And it seems like, mm-hmm. hey, everybody is starting to feel, some of us felt the pinch right away. Other people are just starting to feel it, but it is really making people very uncomfortable. And they're looking for that hope and they're looking for that person who they feel is really going to stand up for them and speak to their best interests. And, you know, I have a spicy question for you. Going back to the last campaign, because here's the thing. You did something. You made an ad in 2018 viral and got so much attention. You were breastfeeding during a political ad.
Yeah, I had just had my second baby when I decided to run. And, you know, I made this ad. I was actually, the subject of the ad was me talking about a law that I created to help make Wisconsin one of the very first states to ban BPA, which is a toxic chemical that was found in children's baby bottles and sippy cups. And it caused all kind of neurological problems for babies. And so I was talking about that and the impact it had on my constituents. And my baby got hungry while we were filming the ad. And so I just nursed her because, you know, when you're a mom, it's just kind of second nature. Like the kid needs a snack. You keep doing what you're doing. You make the snack. You know, the baby needs a change. You just keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, so that's what we did. And the ad went really viral. I think people really responded to it because they said, you know, we know that moms get stuff done. And here's a mom who's like getting stuff done. She's running for governor. And I think people are hungry to see a new generation of leaders and to see people who are kind of just, I'm just a person, right? I'm living my life. I'm a mom. I'm a stepmom. I'm a small business owner. I also happen to be a state senator who loves getting stuff done for my constituents in our state.
Strong use of the word hungry there. I like that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even, right over my head, Kristen.
But, you know, we're seeing, like with social media right now, we're seeing people, everybody is trying to get your attention. And it wasn't that way the last time you ran. So between social media and flooding the zone like the Trump administration is doing now, fundraising tactics have changed entirely just in the past couple of months. The playbook has changed. You used to be able to run for something and you knew what the steps were because they were proven, but now it's a totally different ballgame. So how do you, you know how to juggle things, but how do you decide where do you put your time and energy as you're trying to reach as many Wisconsinites as possible?
Well, listen, I know a lot of things about a lot of different public policy issues, but I don't know everything, and I'm always learning. I'm a really curious person. But the best thing that I think I've got going for me is that I know how to find smart people and trust them to help me be the best candidate that I can be, and be the best legislator that I can be the best governor that I can be. So I really enjoy listening and learning from people who are experts and who know how to navigate new technologies and social media and different platforms. And I also really love to surround myself with people who are incredibly smart and innovative and creative in developing policy, because at the end of the day, we are here to make life better for families like yours and mine and every other family out there, no matter who you voted for, no matter what zip code you live in, right? You deserve a governor who's spending every waking moment thinking about how to make your and your family's life better. And that's what I want to do. So I'm going to leave all the tactical campaign stuff to the professionals. And I'm going to focus on listening and learning and making a difference for you.
Smart. Very smart. When you declared your candidacy, you put it off a little bit because there was a lot happening in the world, a lot of political violence next door in Minnesota. We saw that there were actually some assassinations that happened, and that hit very close to home for you. How did you make a decision to run despite all of that being so fresh?
Well, you know, there's a lot going on in all of our lives right now. And it is a scary time, not just to be in politics, but to be an American. I mean, getting our kids ready to send back to school and what happens, like the very first week, there's a big school shooting, right? So all of us are kind of living with this risk at every time. And ultimately what I decided is, I had the support of my family, and I can't allow myself to be silenced. Just because there are violent people out there who want me to be quiet, my voice and your voice and our voices together are more important than ever. If we are going to save our country and our democracy, we really need to work together and keep talking, keep fighting, keep working together.
I think, too, if we let that ugliness silence those of us who are building community and trying to pull people together, people lose hope. They look to people like you to lift them up and to give them that vision of a future.
Well, you know, I get my hope from the people that I meet, right? The people that I talk to on the campaign trail who are facing really significant challenges, and yet they are getting up every day. They are making their kids breakfast, going to work, and they just want someone who's going to work hard and think about them every minute of the day. And that's what I do in my job now, and that's what I will do as governor.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to continuing this conversation with you after the break, when we're going to talk about, how about reproductive rights for a little bit? Interested?
Love it. I'm ready.
Wonderful. I'm talking with Senator Kelderoy. She's running for Wisconsin governor. And we'll be back shortly. This is Dr. Kristen Lyerly, all across the Civic Media Radio Network, streaming on the Civic Media app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Talking about guns with others might not always feel comfortable, but it could save a life. Here's a way to start a conversation. Your family is going over to your neighbor's home for dinner for the first time. How would you ask if there are any unlocked guns in the home?
Hey!
Hey, we're so excited for tonight. Before we come over, though, may I ask if there are any unlocked guns in your home?
Our guns are stored securely, locked in a safe that the kids can't access.
Awesome.
Learn how to have the conversation at agreetoagree.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns, it's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at HazeldenBettyFord.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
Are National Guard troops generally trained in law enforcement? No. National Guard troops like those President Donald Trump deployed to American cities in recent months to crack down on crime are not generally trained in law enforcement. For example, police officers in Washington, D.C. receive 21 training modules in criminal procedure, but Guard members receive none. Their primary training is focused on crowd control. Milwaukee's police union president suggested troops should be sent to Wisconsin's largest city. Governor Tony Evers called National Guard troops the, quote, wrong people, unquote, for fighting crime. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and I am here with State Senator Kelderoy's candidate for Wisconsin governor. We are talking about who she is, why she's running, and of course, we're going to talk about reproductive health care. Senator Royce, you've been a champion on this issue for literally decades.
That's true. I've been very passionate about this issue actually since I was young. I mean, I volunteered for Planned Parenthood when I was in high school, and it became so clear to me that as a girl and as a young woman, I was not going to have the same opportunities as my male peers unless I had the opportunity to decide when and whether and under what circumstances I wanted to have kids. So after law school, I became the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Wisconsin, a statewide advocacy organization that works to expand access to reproductive health and reproductive justice. Then I served in the state assembly, where I was a leading voice for reproductive rights. And now, of course, in the state Senate, I co-lead the Reproductive Freedom Caucus in the Capitol.
And the work that you've done has been really important for the women of Wisconsin. But let's be honest, in your tenure in the legislature, we've seen so many hits to our reproductive freedom. It just feels like every time I turn around, there's another something. And there have been some incremental gains, but overall, it's been this like long downhill. How do you keep your chin up and keep fighting for it?
Well, I know that abortion is not controversial, despite a very vocal and well-funded minority trying to all trick us into thinking that we want to live in Gilead in The Handmaid's Tale. Mm-hmm. Every single day we see everyday people just absolutely rejecting that. That's why pro-choice amendments, abortion rights amendments, have won in states of every political complexion all across the country. And if Wisconsin was able to get referendums on the ballot without the legislature's permission, we'd have seen that here too. 80% of Wisconsinites want to make their own reproductive health decisions along with their doctors. They do not want politician involved, right? Government's good for a lot of things, but it isn't good for that. And, you know, the other thing is that I do see progress, right? When I was at NARAL, for instance, we had a situation where a lot of hospitals around the state are Catholic or religiously affiliated, and they were not, if you came there after being sexually assaulted, if you went to an emergency room, they really didn't know how to treat you. They didn't have sexual assault nurse examiners. They would not offer you emergency contraception or the standard of care that we expect. And I helped build a coalition and get Republican support to pass the very first pro-choice law in decades, the Compassionate Care for Rape Victim Act, so that every single person, no matter who you are or what hospital you happen to live closest to, if you go to an emergency room and you've been sexually assaulted, you are going to get offered emergency contraception. You are going to get that standard of care that every one of us deserves. And when you see that we together have the power to force an anti-choice Republican assembly to pass a pro-choice law, it's really energizing. Then when I ran for assembly and was elected, I helped Wisconsin become a leader in really, really smart, medically accurate, age-appropriate sex education for young people, because the best way to reduce the need for abortion is to increase access to contraception and to make sure that young people have the information that they need to make healthy choices throughout their lifespan. We did both of those things. You know, there was a situation where Viagra was getting covered by insurance, but birth control wasn't. That's not fair. So we remedied that when I was elected to the assembly. And there is a lot more that we can do. I've worked really hard to help flip the Supreme Court, to help put the legislature in a position where we're going to have legislative majorities in one or both houses. And that's the kind of power that we can build together around the issue of reproductive rights, which post-Dobbs is more important and more salient than ever, because we are at constant threat of having not just abortion access, but birth control, fertility treatments, and IVF, our general access to healthcare rolled back by the Republican regime.
Well, to have to fight to make sure that people can get emergency healthcare after they're sexually assaulted, that just mm-hmm. doesn't make any sense at all to me, but that is the reality that we're living in. And now you have introduced some really visionary legislation. But when I heard about what you wanted to do, I thought, are you just banging your head against a wall here? Because it is not going to happen. But could it?
It absolutely could. And we see states around the country where women and men are coming together and saying, we don't want politicians making these decisions for us. With Dobbs, people really see the impact of anti-choice policies. And the more they see of it, the less they want. Nobody wants their loved one turned away from the emergency room when they're having a miscarriage and instead sent to bleed out in a Walmart parking lot. Yet that is happening in America. We're seeing women be criminalized when they have miscarriages. Rather than being taken to the hospital for treatment, they're being taken to jail and incarcerated, right? This is absolutely dystopian. Nobody wants to live like this. And that's why abortion rights are becoming even more popular than they already were, because what we're really talking about is, should people be able to get this healthcare and make their own decisions? Or should it be a crime that puts everyone in legal jeopardy and means that women's lives are going to be jeopardized because the provider has to be thinking, hey, is it safe for me to actually care for this person? Do I want to risk my medical license and my freedom and my financial security? You know, or should I wait until this person's just a little bit sicker so that I have a stronger case in case I'm prosecuted by a rogue anti-choice prosecutor? That's not a good world to live in. And Americans don't want that world. And so I do have a lot of hope, because we are seeing pro-choice wins all over the country.
I definitely know that fear as a doctor who practices in Wisconsin and has been threatened by that. Hey, in the 30 seconds before we take a break, what is that one piece of reproductive rights legislation that you look forward to signing when you're elected?
Well, it would be the Abortion Rights Protection Act that would state once and for all that every single one of us has the power and the freedom to make our own reproductive health decisions. And to me, that's just fundamental freedom that we deserve as Americans. It doesn't matter who you are. You're the one who should be in charge of your own health and your own destiny.
I'm in. All right. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. I'm talking with Senator Kelderoy. She's running for governor in Wisconsin. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. We will be back after this short break. So stay with us.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
CBS News Brief. Four people have been shot and killed in South Carolina. Here's CBS's Vicki Barker.
The shooting occurred in the early hours of this morning at a crowded bar on the island of St. Helena. Victims and witnesses ran, panicked, to nearby homes and businesses trying to escape the shooter.
Hostages alive and dead are expected to be released tomorrow, Israeli government spokesperson Shosh Bedrosian.
Once the Red Cross hands the remains to the IDF forces inside of controlled Israeli territory in Gaza, our forces will hold a short ceremony in the Gaza Strip during that handover.
Republicans aren't budging from their position on the government shutdown. Vice President J.D. Vance on CBS's Face the Nation.
All that Donald Trump is now saying to Chuck Schumer and the far-left Democrats, we are not going to negotiate over opening the government. We'll negotiate on health care policy, but only once you do your job and open up the people's government.
We're entering the third week of the shutdown. CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
The Brewers beat the Cubs. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from AmFam Field, where the Brewers beat the Cubs 3-1 last night to advance to the National League Championship Series. Things got started for the crew in the bottom of the first with William Contreras at the plate. Coverage on TBS.
And he pulls this one deep to left center, way back, and gone! The Brewers strike first in Game 5.
Solo home runs later from Andrew Vaughn and Bryce Turang. Jacob Mizorowski, the Miz, awarded the win. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
Yeah, that Miz was gassed. I would have loved to keep him in. You know, we told him to empty the tank in that last inning. He was magnificent. He who's had some bumps in the road here during his first year, for him to come back again in this same series and pitch so well.
So the Brewers host the Dodgers here tomorrow night. First pitch 7:08 for game one of the National League Championship Series. In Milwaukee with sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Normally, I prefer to see movies in the theater, but we'll have to rethink that when Minecraft 2 comes out. Variety reports a Minecraft sequel is in the works after the first flick made almost $1 billion worldwide. Not sure if you remember or heard this, but there is a zombie chicken baby scene that made teenage boys do very gross things in the movie theater. You might want to sit that one out and wait for it to stream. Minecraft 2 is scheduled to hit theaters July 23rd of 2027. Variety is also reporting that Bradley Cooper is in talks to star in the prequel of the Ocean's 11 franchise. The film will be set before the first Steven Soderbergh version of Ocean's 11 in 2001. This franchise is a remake of the original Ocean's 11 from 1960 that starred Frank Sinatra and some of his Rat Pack pals. The new film is rumored to be set in 1960s Europe. Margot Robbie is already on board to play the female lead. They are really milking this ocean thing. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly sunny for today, a high in the mid-60s. For tonight, mostly cloudy, a few showers around. Lows in the low 50s and a little breezy. A clearing sky as we look on into Monday. High temperatures in the mid-60s. It's 60 right now.
You can't escape a traffic jam. Know what else you can't escape? Seasonal allergies. And you might think you can avoid that coffee stain until... Oh, really? You can't escape a lot of things in life, but you can escape prediabetes. Prediabetes captures 1 in 3 adults. There are usually no signs of prediabetes. In fact, most people don't even know they have it. But with early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Take action by taking the 1-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. You might not be able to escape having this song stuck in your head, but you can escape prediabetes. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Pete Schwabba. On the next Nightlight from HBO's Task, I welcome Jamie McShane and comedian and host of the WGN Morning Show, Mike Toomey. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with State Senator Kelderoys. We're talking about her and her run for governor here in Wisconsin. And we've gotten to that point in the show where we're about to talk about her vision for what the state will look like when she is governor. But before we get to that, I just want to mention that if you didn't hear the beginning of the show, you can always find it wherever you get your podcasts. And we are here every Saturday at noon across the Civic Media Radio Network. It's so exciting to be broadcast statewide. So having said all of that, Senator, I have a question for you about the budget. Because remember when the budget passed and it was controversial and everybody wasn't aligned? You voted against the state budget when a lot of Democrats supported the compromise. So walk me through that decision on your part. When is compromise essential and when do you draw a line, especially in a starkly divided time like now?
Well, I will say that the vast majority of Democrats opposed the budget, and that's because it really did not meet the needs of our kids in particular. I'm someone who is really, really proud of my record of working across the aisle. I have passed tons of bipartisan legislation. I've been able to pass bills in Democratic legislatures, in split legislatures, and in Republican legislatures. That's one of the things that sets me apart in this race, is that I have been getting policy wins on all different kinds of issues, including some kind of unexpected ones like reproductive rights or criminal justice reform, even when Republicans are in control. And I think that's really, really essential, because at the end of the day, I'm always going to say, what is best for Wisconsin? Is this going to make life better for Wisconsin families? And if so, then I'm going to do everything I can to get it passed. But that budget fell short of what our kids need and deserve. And let's be clear, our kids have not gotten an inflationary increase in a generation. And we have a teacher retention crisis. Every single school district in the state, whether you're from a high poverty district or a very wealthy district, whether you're rural, urban, or suburban, every single district is feeling the squeeze, because this has gone on for so long, where we're asking schools to basically do more and more and more with fewer resources, and it is not sustainable. And what happens when we do that? Your property taxes go up and up and up. And that's because schools know that they either have to close down programs that kids need, they have to lay off teachers and staff and increase class sizes. They can't keep the lights on unless you vote to raise your own property taxes. That's really divisive and it's wrong. And we cannot support another state budget that continues that really destructive and divisive cycle.
So how do we fix our broken school funding system? I mean, Governor Evers is a former state superintendent. He is a former teacher and he hasn't been able to get it across the line. How are you going to do it?
Well, there's a lot that we can do. And the first thing is to be honest about where that money is going, right? It's not that we don't have enough money to make sure that every kid in the state can thrive and get the great public education that is their birthright as a Wisconsin kid. Number one, we have to stop shoveling our tax dollars to billionaires and big corporations. You know, Wisconsin used to have a progressive tax structure, and then Walker came in and they totally flattened it. And what that means is that working people are really carrying the brunt of our tax burden through property taxes, whether you're a homeowner or a renter, and through an income tax that's really flattened. We're also seeing billions of dollars of our local schools' money going to private voucher schemes that are unaccountable. These are organizations that can discriminate against students and teachers, that do not have to follow the same standards as public schools, do not have the same transparency or any accountability to taxpayers. And I think that's wrong. I think that when we pay our tax dollars into the public coffers, that money should go to public schools. And if you want to send your kid to private school, that's fine. But what we've seen is that the voucher program is primarily subsidizing kids who already were going to private school. It's not, you know, getting new kids in. It's just saying you used to be paying for your own kids' private tuition, and now the taxpayers are going to pay for it. That's wrong. If we were able to rein in that voucher program, we would have more than enough money to help make sure that our schools can set every kid up for success. And that's really what we want. It's not just about more money for schools. It's about better schools for every child in every community. And money is a part of it. It's not the only part of it, but you can't do it without money.
You can't. And we can't operate two parallel school systems. I remember growing up in a blue-collar neighborhood in Kaukauna, and my parents, who were not college-educated, were so proud of our education system back then.
Yeah.
And it's changed so much since then. And it really makes me worry about the future of students and of our population in general if we can't continue to provide that quality education for them.
You know, that's why I'm in Wisconsin. Both my parents were from other states. They came here. I was born in Marshfield. I spent my early years in rural Taylor County, north of Highway 29. My parents actually, I grew up in a one-room schoolhouse that they had been abandoned for years. They remodeled it. They wanted to raise their kids in a place that valued public education because they knew that was so important to the future for me and my siblings. And that dream, that commitment, is being taken away from the next generation by decades of Republican budget cuts and the disrespect and disregard that they have shown our teachers and our public school system. That has to change. And by the way, it's not enough, I think, to just make sure that we have a great K-12 system. We need to be investing in early childhood and affordable childcare. Every single kid deserves that great start in life, and parents deserve to know that their kids are safe and thriving while they are working. We also need to make sure that higher ed is accessible, whether you want to learn a trade and be an apprentice, whether you want to go to tech school, join the military, or go to one of our great universities. That needs to be accessible, and we shouldn't be cutting people off from those opportunities because of how much money their parents have or don't have.
I love the Wisconsin idea because it starts with the universities and it filters out through across the entire state into every community. It teaches, it educates, it supports, it small businesses thrive. People do well when the Wisconsin idea is alive and well. And that's just one of many innovative things that have happened here in Wisconsin. But you know, historically, when you look at our state, we haven't had any diversity when it comes to the role of the governor. We've only had white men in that role. You would be the first woman governor in Wisconsin. What perspective or approach do you think that brings beyond just the symbolism of being the first?
Well, I mean, I think I have a lot of different perspectives that I would bring as governor. Obviously, being a mom and a stepmom of five, I think the ability to manage chaos and keep a cheery disposition is really important because you do face, you know, we have really serious challenges in this state. And we need someone who can be a cheerleader for our state while still being the leader that we need in tough times, right? Whether that's a natural disaster, which we're prone to here in Wisconsin, right? If we have floods or tornadoes, we need someone who can actually govern and get things done. You know, I have experience as an executive running my own successful small business for 13 years. I know what it's like to feel the weight of responsibility for people's livelihoods, right? And want to, you know, fulfill your customers' needs, fulfill your employees' needs. I have run a statewide nonprofit organization. I'm an attorney. And so I have a lot of different perspectives. I'm the daughter of a social worker mom and a law enforcement dad. And my stepdad is an environmental you know, conservation attorney. So I have a lot of different perspectives that I would bring to the governorship. And I think the most important one is a lifelong Wisconsinite who loves this state and the people in it. No matter who you are or where you're from or who you vote for, frankly, I'm going to do my best to make sure that you and your family and your loved ones can thrive.
And frankly, I think most Wisconsinites, I mean, there are definitely people who are like Democrats or Republicans, but I think most Wisconsinites are actually kind of up for grabs. Like, they just want somebody who they can believe in, who is going to help their communities thrive. And that makes me think about businesses. If Main Street isn't alive and well and thriving with a future, what happens to the rest of your community? So how are you going to create that environment, that climate, so we can have a thriving small business community? So everything isn't about corporations and the wealthy.
Yeah, and this is something I'm really passionate about. So I'm glad you asked, Kristen. As a small business owner, I want the doors of entrepreneurship to be open to anyone who has a great idea and has the tenacity to see it through and build a business, right? And that means, number one, I have a program called Main Street Bounce Back. This was incredibly successful to help small businesses get brick and mortar locations in downtowns all around Wisconsin, small communities, towns, villages, and cities, and fill in these vacant storefronts and bring in more customers. It's been incredibly successful. You know, up in Hayward, there's a fly fishing business that's bringing people from all over the region, and they were helped by a Main Street Bounce Back grant. In Madison, there's a wine shop that was able to expand and, you know, take their business to the next level because of these grants, right? So there's all different kinds of businesses that can thrive. But the other thing we need to do is we have got to make healthcare and retirement and family leave affordable and accessible to every single person in the state, no matter what job you have. I would like to see the state health insurance plan and the state pension system opened up that any individual or any organization or business can buy into at a reasonable rate. You can have the security of knowing that those well-managed, low-cost nonprofit plans are available to you. And that really lowers the risk of starting your own business. Same thing with paid family and medical leave, right? Any one of us are just one car accident or one, you know, bad diagnosis away from a health crisis. And it shouldn't put you into bankruptcy or into poverty. You shouldn't have to choose between, you know, paying your rent and seeing your baby's first smile. These are things that we can do in Wisconsin that will help every single worker and help every single business thrive.
It's true. I mean, a healthcare crisis, a car accident, a healthcare crisis is the number one reason why people suffer from bankruptcy. So there's a lot of work.
In the richest country in the world, Kristen.
And
we spend
sense.
So much money on healthcare, and yet we're not getting the outcomes because so much of that money is not going to the providers. It's not going in your pocket, Dr. Lierley, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to payers. It's going to middlemen. It's going to this big administration system that says, no, you can't have this procedure. No, you know, you need to jump through all these hoops if you want us to pay for that drug that your doctor says you needed. It's crazy. We spend the money and we don't get the care.
Right. And I think that leaves a lot of rural folks, especially feeling very disenfranchised, like they are completely left out of the conversation. They don't have the resources and they are just looking for an alternative, somebody who actually thinks about them.
Right. And that's, you know, I think about them every day and I'm terrified of what's going to happen over the next couple of years as these Republican budget cuts come down. Hundreds of thousands of Wisconsinites are going to lose their health care. And it's not just Badger Care. It's people who have bought plans on the Affordable Care Act that are no longer going to be able to get those plans. And what's going to happen to all of the rural health care centers around the state where these people live? What is going to happen to all these health care providers in rural areas that now all of a sudden have a bunch of uninsured people? They're going to close. So even if you have private insurance, you're not going to have a doctor to go to. That's what's going to happen because of the Republican changes. We've got to stop that. Everybody deserves access to health care, period.
This is one of my biggest worries. We're talking with State Senator Kelda Roy. She is running for Wisconsin governor, and we will be back with our last segment after this short break. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Reach reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
This message is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. As a credit union dedicated to serving all veterans, active duty, and their families, we know that during the holiday season, every little bit counts. That's why for a limited time, you could earn a $250 cash bonus when you spend $2,500 on the Cash Rewards and Cash Rewards Plus cards in the first 90 days. Give joy, get joy. Join now at NavyFederal.org. Navy Federal Credit Union, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA. Cashback terms and conditions apply. Visit NavyFederal.org/cash rewards for details. Offer ends 1/1/26.
Tune in to WFHR on Friday, October 31st from 4 to 7 for a special Halloween broadcast featuring the entire station staff. Get ready for trick-or-treating by listening to spooky stories, scary songs, and creepy poems to get you in the mood for a frightfully fun evening. This special is brought to you by Johnson & Sons Jeep, Gary's Coins, Hoffman's Tackle, Elks Lodge 693, El Cafe, Maker's Square, Beaver's Dime Store, Jensen Community Center, and E-Way Sales and Pawn. Listen Halloween night from 4 to 7 if you dare.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In recent weeks, the level of activity from Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, has increased quite a bit. There was a raid in Manitowoc at a Walmart parking lot where dairy workers were known to congregate, a series of arrests in Madison, and in Milwaukee, ICE is looking to expand its operations significantly by seeking office space downtown to go along with a new field office on the city's northwest side. This has been concerning for many, and not without reason. A recent large-scale ICE raid in an apartment building in Chicago saw reports of armed federal agents breaking down doors, U.S. citizens detained for hours on end, and children being dragged from their homes in the middle of the night. While the American immigration system has a host of problems, this kind of violent show of force is not an acceptable way to address these problems. And ICE also just received an injection of $45 billion in the One Big Beautiful Bill, so it is imperative for all of us to hold ICE accountable and speak out when things go too far. Right now, things are going way too far.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with State Senator Kelda Royce. She's running for governor in Wisconsin. And we were just talking about what's happening in rural communities, health care, small businesses, and wages. Kelda, what is your take on how are we going to be able to pay people what they are worth so that they can then contribute back into their own communities?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, first of all, workers need more power, right, to negotiate with the bosses, right? We have too many monopolies that have concentrated power, and it's the same monopolies that raise prices and limit your access to information and media are also the ones that are keeping your wages low. And even if you're a middle class or a white collar worker, guess what? You are probably being underpaid. So raising the minimum wage is a really important thing. When we raise the minimum wage, it lifts all workers' wages. Strengthening and recommitting to unions. If you want to join a union, you should absolutely have the right to do it. And you should be able to collectively bargain. That is something that I fought for when I was in the assembly against Act 10 and Scott Walker's attack on workers. And I really believe it as somebody who was raised in a union household and knows the power that can provide for a family. We need to really take seriously lowering costs for things like healthcare, housing, prescription drugs, childcare, utilities, right? The really big ticket items, not just groceries, that are stretching people's pocketbooks. All of this is absolutely within our power. We can do this. And when I'm governor, this is what we're going to be focused on every day.
It feels like everybody's struggling to get by right now, but I just see the vision in you, and having known you for as long as we've known each other, I feel very hopeful and optimistic. But before we get to saying goodbye, I do have some Wisconsin questions for you, because you are a Wisconsin gal who was raised in a one-room schoolhouse. So
let's have it.
Let's go. Okay. Time machine. If you could go back in time and have lunch with any former Wisconsin governor, who would it be?
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I will say fighting Bob La Follette, because I think that so many of the things that he faced are rearing their heads now, right? This idea of concentrated corporate wealth, of monopolists that are not only controlling our economy, but also our government. And yet he was able to build a new movement, starting the Progressive Party, and bring people together and say, you know what? Government is not for the wealthiest. It's not for the big businesses and the titans of industry. It is for us. It's for making people's lives better. And they did that with electoral reform and consumer protections and labor laws, and really helped Wisconsin lead the way. And we can do that again.
I think we sometimes forget that Wisconsin is a progressive state at our core. And Bob La Follette was really the person who spearheaded that back in the day. And we can have that again.
We absolutely can. And, you know, we've had it before, right? With Gaylord Nelson, right? Tony Earle. We've had a lot of great leadership in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
we have. Russ Feingold.
Right? Yes. Okay, so here's my second fun question for you. Take some time with this one. Because it's important. You have to convince somebody to move to Wisconsin using only three things: a place, a food, and an activity. What do you choose? And why? And it's really hard.
Wow.
Because there's so much. I know.
I'm not stumped usually when I'm doing interviews, Kristen. you've done it. Wow.
When you love so much about Wisconsin, it's really hard to pick a place, like all the places.
I know. It's an incredible state. I would say a place. I'm going to say Lake Superior. I just think, you know, the fresh coast, the North Coast, whatever you want to call it, it is, you're never more alive than after you've gone swimming in Lake Superior. And
by alive, you mean frozen, right?
Correct. I mean, the earliest I ever went swimming in Lake Superior was March. Have not done that since, but I do like to swim in the summer. And I really, you know, the cold does... I don't know. It makes you a better person.
It preserves you. That's for sure.
It does. I mean, and for food, I love dairy. I love old fashions. The cheese is amazing. Ice cream, obviously, but I'm going to have to go with maple syrup.
It's a little bit of a thing
for me, Kristen, because I have a really important bill, Truth in Maple Syrup, to make sure that if you ask for maple syrup with your pancakes, that the restaurant can't lie to you and give you corn syrup instead.
That's so disappointing when you order pancakes and they give you and you're like, no, I'm from Wisconsin. No, I need maple
syrup. I should have had
an
omelet. This is terrible, right? So maple syrup for sure. From any, you know, small sugar bush throughout our state, this is a great agricultural product. And when I'm governor, that bill is going to become law. Truth in maple syrup.
That'll be your pet.
Yeah. And an activity, boy, I love biking. I love hiking. You know, there's so much great stuff to do in Wisconsin, outdoors, but I think I'm going to say protesting. And I say that because I think that one of the really special things about this state is we are politically engaged, and this isn't partisan, right? This isn't about, you know, your perspective or a policy issue. This is about the fact that we have really high voter turnout. The people in this state really care deeply about what happens here and what happens to our neighbors. And I think that is a wonderful quality. And we hold our government accountable. We want people. We want that government to be transparent. We want them to spend our money responsibly, and we want to know how they're doing it. And we want to make sure that when government does something wrong, that we're out in the streets talking about it. And I think that ability to participate in democracy and make our voice heard and pay attention is really, really important right now. And it's something that I really love and appreciate about this state. Even when I'm not on the side of the issue being protested, I really respect that Wisconsinites get out there and do it.
I really respect you. And I am so grateful to you for spending this time with us talking about all of the things that you will do when you are elected governor in Wisconsin. Senator Kelderoys, thank you.
Thank you, Kristen. So good to be with you.
All right, friends, this is the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley. Thanks for tuning in here on Civic Media, and we will see you next time.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Katherine Watson at the White House, where President Trump is getting ready to leave for a whirlwind trip to the Middle East to mark the agreement between Israel and Hamas. The president leaves Washington this afternoon and will touch down in Tel Aviv Monday morning local time. The first thing on his schedule in Tel Aviv is meeting with hostage families. President Trump plans to be present when the 20 living hostages are returned to their families in what will be an emotional reunion Monday. It's been more than 2 years since those hostages were taken captive by Hamas on October 7th.
I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy says the end of the conflict in Gaza and the release of the hostages could have happened long ago.
This deal has been on the table for over a year, and it's been Benjamin Netanyahu, because of his political considerations domestically, trying to protect himself.